Lennon, Richard Nixon, back again. Moonshot, Woodstock, Watergate, punk rock, Bacon, Reagan, Palestine, terror on the airline, Ayatollahs in Iran, Russians in Afghanistan, Wheel of Fortune, Sally Ride, heavy metal, suicide, foreign debts, homeless vets, AIDS, crack, Bernie gets hypodermics on the shore, China's under martial law, rock and roller, cola wars, I can't take it anymore.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, but when we are gone, will it still burn on and on and on and on and on and on? We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire.
And good morning to you all. I'm Pete Santiolo from Lying Around, Connecticut. And I've got a very special guest for you today. Mike, are you there?
Yes. How you doing?
This is Mike Del Judas from Big Shot, the Billy Joel tribute band that will be playing at the Harrington Fairgrounds tomorrow. It'll be a wonderful time. I went there last year, and I can speak from experience. This will be a great experience if you're teetering on the edge of showing up. Stop your thought right now. Just find a way to get a ticket and just be there. It's going to be that much fun. I mean, these guys are great. They interact with the audience. I've been going to concerts for years, and close your eyes and you won't even know it's not Billy Joel up there. He's just he just sounds that much like him, and he puts his own twist on it. He's got some of his own stuff that he does. It's all great stuff, and it's a blast, really. And Mike, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I have I was wondering, in the New York Times, the article, Billy Joel was quoted saying, "It's a homage to me," Mr. Joel said in a telephone conversation, "just to think that they can sustain a lot of appearances based on my music is great. A friend called me and told me to listen to this band that was playing on TV, and I said, that's me. Mr. Joel said, that's no, it's the band. And it was hard, they had a hard time convincing me that was me. It's uncanny." Mike, did you pick up the paper that morning and read it, or did someone else call you and say, hey, you had a look at the New York Times, see what's that? And how did you feel when you read that?
I mean, you know, it was very surreal. It was an honor. And I think just at the time, just getting contacted by him and his camp was just an honor enough. And, you know, at that point is when I think we got invited down. It was in 2002 or 2003, and we did sound check at the Nassau Coliseum right before one of his shows, which was just, you know, incredible. So it was a real honor. I mean, the whole situation has been, you know, a blessing for me and everyone involved, and we're just honored. You know, that's the best thing I could say about having Billy Joel say anything about you. You know,
yeah. I mean, you're out there. Yeah, it's great. You're out there. You're playing all his, you know, all his songs, and you're working hard at it. And when you're out there, are you out there trying to play the best Billy Joel music, or and do the best for him? Or are you out there just with your whole heart, just playing music that you really truly believe in and enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you start any kind of band and you're gonna plan on making a living with it and going the full direction with it, it's got to be something you love and you love playing. Otherwise, you're gonna eventually get bored with it. But I think even further than boredom comes your own music and my passion for writing and recording and all that stuff and having CDs, and that keeps a lot of the stuff more original and more real. And then you can kind of, you know, mix all that stuff in between, and it kind of pieces together the puzzle.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts of the show last year, because, I mean, whenever you go to a tribute band, you wonder, you know, these guys are so good. Why are they always playing somebody else's music? And then you were out there, and then you started playing some of your own stuff, and it was really good. And I was on the website, and I listened to two of your songs. I think those, are they your newer ones? It was One Step at a Time. and yeah, ordinary yeah, guy.
Yeah.
And man, One Step at a Time was just wonderful. It really was. I've been a wedding DJ for 22 years, and I tell you, somebody hears that at a wedding, they're just going to have to break out a box of tissues and just start crying. Who inspired that song for you?
My wife right now. You know, we had a nice story. There's another song actually on the record called Over and Over Again that kind of tells the story of how we got back together. But we were together years ago, probably 15 years ago, and lived together and dated, and then both went our separate ways and had other relationships, and then got back together. And I needed kind of a way to propose to her that was original, you know. I figured the classic bring her to a Yankee game wasn't going to work. So I decided, I went downstairs and I just started, you know, kind of all came out in about, you know, an hour. I just kind of penned the song and got the melody and all that stuff, and then ended up, you know, unfortunately ended up not finishing it in time and just couldn't control myself, and I had to propose, so I ended up proposing to her and then played her the song, and, you know, it was kind of history from there. So we married March 6th of about a year and a half ago.
Oh, congratulations. March 6th is my aunt's birthday. I'm March 16th, so it's a... That's a great time of year.
Yeah, it is. I'm March 9th, so close to the birthday.
That's great. An Ordinary Guy, what's that about?
You know, I mean, I think the premise, it was really written about, you know, musicians getting the stigma that all we care about is, you know, that we're all, you know, basically we're all unfaithful, we're all whatever, and there's always so much of a stigma about, you know, if you're a musician, oh, forget it, you know, don't be with a musician, they'll cheat, they'll do this, they'll do that. I think it was me more kind of putting my own thing out there and saying, look, not everybody's like this. Not everybody lives like this. I'm married. I have 4 kids. You know, life is good. It doesn't have to be. It's not always, you know, the classic, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of deal. And I think I was more kind of putting a stamp on that and saying, look, it's not always like that. You know, I'm just a plain guy that just loves to be with family, loves to be with my kids, and kind of erase that stigma from people's minds that, you know, it's not all about the, you know, the flashiness and the prettiness and the whatever. It just doesn't, you know, doesn't really do anything for me at a show because I'm there to play, you know. So I think that's kind of where it all kind of stems from with Ordinary Guy.
Yeah, and play
it. I could say it was inspired by somebody, and it really was, but I won't give names.
That's all right. We're not here for that. But well, you know, everybody gets a stigma in every field, not just musicians. But yeah, musicians have a habit of, because people think that, you know, you get thousand. They see the psychos stalking them around, and people throwing themselves at them, and they're
all there. Trust me, that's no joke. You know, that kind of stuff does happen. I mean, it's, you know, it's always going to be there, and it's always going to be, you know, in your face, and it's always. But it's really about where your heart is, and who are you as a person, and all that stuff is really just trappings, and it doesn't really affect you if you're solid and you have that base inside of you. You know, whether you're married, whether you're not married, you're either that kind of person or you're not, so I think that's kind of where it gravitates toward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, opportunities out there for everybody. It just, you know, so happens when you play in front of thousands of people on a regular basis, you meet more people, and yeah, either you're solid or you're not, and you make your choices, absolutely. But the problem is, once one musician does that, it just kind of labels everybody the same, because you're all out there, you know, playing music, and your music may be different, and your lifestyles may be different, but people don't separate that, and it's just, yeah, no. But it was a great song. I love both of them for different reasons, and I listened to the first one, and it's a wonderful love song, and it just was, you know, it struck me. I'm like, wow, I mean, this thing ever tops the charts, I'm going to be playing, it's going to be a classic for years out, and I'll probably be, you know, as long as I'm, you know, DJing, I'll probably, you know, I'm sure people would, you know, will love hearing that.
Thank you. That's an honor. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, absolutely. I've, you know, the words and the sound was beautiful. The song came out beautiful, and the words, just what it was talking about and everything. When you actually listen to it, there's, you know, it's that perfect, and like you said, you wrote it to propose. So, I mean, you know.
It's funny, you know, when you write songs, like I wasn't actually, it's one of those songs that I never thought I would perform myself. Like I wrote it for my wife, and it was all about my wife and about that. But I think as a songwriter, the songwriter in me was thinking, you know, Lone Star or Rascal Flatts, and, you know, maybe let me write this big wedding tune and, you know, use it for what I have to use it for, obviously for my marriage and for my wedding, and then maybe just kind of, you know, ship it to someone else to re-record and and do, and now it's become more where I'm doing it a lot more, and I don't know if I ever saw it that way. I kind of, there's like the songwriter in me, and then there's the performer in me, and I think the songwriter in me is always hoping that somebody will take one of these things and, you know, make them huge, you know, make one of these songs huge, and I guess, you know, it's that balance between, am I the artist doing it myself, or am I just the writer? So it's kind of like a troubling mix.
Yeah, well, when you wrote that, and you wrote that from your heart, I mean, like any song that comes from the heart, I mean, it just, you know, I've never heard a bad song that comes from somebody's heart when they write one, right. Especially when they have somebody focused in mind. And like I said, that's part of what you do, and you're out there, and you put yourself forward, and it was wonderful last year. I mean, the saxophone player came and jumped right out into the audience, and I was out there with my camera for Lying Around Connecticut and the TV version that I do on local community access. And okay. I was out there trying to get the crowd and get everybody and do my best to, you know, let everybody know what they're missing when they don't, you know, they don't show up. And it was just a blast. And everybody was out there dancing. I mean, the dance field was, you know, I don't want to call it a dance floor, but the area roped off for dancing was completely packed.
It got pretty crazy. Yeah, it was great. Very exciting audience. It was one of those shows like in Connecticut that we can remember from playing there and just going, wow, that was, you know, a lot of energy in the audience and a lot of excitement. There was a lot on the stage also, and I think it'll be even more this time. So I'm excited about it.
Well, that's because you guys were excited and you were up there and you were interacting with everybody, and you were bantering back and forth and playing practical jokes up on stage, you know, through your talking and with the music. I was catching that, and it was, you guys were having fun, so everybody else had fun. And it's terrible to go to a concert and just see the performer just who's a little shy and not interactive and get up there and just sing their songs and then get off the stage and not try and get to know everybody. And it's just, that was, you know, what you brought forth, and it was a blast. And
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's hard because, you know, you never know what a performer is bringing onto the stage. You know, you see the band up there for, you know, the 2 hours that they're playing or whatever it is, and you know, you wonder what the heck is going on in everybody's mind. What happened before they got here? Is there something personal going on in their life that they have to kind of put aside and get on stage? And in our lives with children and, you know, with chaos and just all that, you know, all the stuff that life brings, there are nights, you know, you get up there and you literally have to remember, you know, this is what I was born to do. I have to shake off the, you know, whatever's on my mind or whatever stuff is going on. And that kind of stuff can affect the performance. So you just have to kind of be ahead of that and realize, you know, nobody in this audience knows what anybody's going through. Don't let them know. Get up there, do your best, enjoy it, love it, be thankful that we have a job, that we can do what we do, and do what we love. So, you know, it's one of those situations, you just quite never know the mechanics of what's going on, you know, behind it all. So.
No, and it takes a whole, not only the band that you're playing with, it takes a whole crew with you, your sound crew, your band, and everybody, and somebody behind the scenes helping you coordinate everything and telling you, oh, this sounds good. Well, maybe, you know, maybe your drummer should key it down just a little bit and, you know, turn up the mic, because I've done sound before, and it's really challenging when you get your drummer, he's fully into something and he's banging away, and then you've got your guitarist isn't playing as hard, and you got to turn up the mic on the guitarist and turn down the mics on the drummer because, you know, you don't have them up that high to begin with.
Sound is a whole other animal, and I think the most important thing that, you know, I figured out early in the game with this band, which is back from, say, 2000, was always have the best production crew you can. You know, we have some great guys that do sound for us and work for us, or even just our regular sound guys that do walk-ins and walk into other people's, you know, gigs and mix, you know, at the show. I think Scott's coming this Saturday, Scott LaRochelle.
Oh, good.
He's from the Massachusetts area. He's our production guy that does most of our big stuff. And it's great to have that confidence of knowing that every show, even if it's going to be in a different place, different speakers, different whatever, you have a guy that, you know, just knows what he's doing on every bit of equipment he can find. You know, he's like the MacGyver of, you know, of the sound world, and having that confidence is great, because we can just focus on performing, which is really what we want to do. You know, we don't want to have to worry about that other stuff. So
right, and
having great production helps.
Yeah, and you guys do it so well anyway. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, that. And my end, I'm always, you know, you can always tell when it's not sounding that good, there's something wrong or something like that, because I've been doing it for 22 years, and it's like it's not worth buying bad equipment. And some people try, and it's just, when you get that, it's like irritating, because here's, you know, especially you guys, you can't afford to have somebody who would do that, because you guys are so great. It's just that you know,
it's important you don't need sound. To me, it's important if you do a great show somewhere and everybody says, wow, that was a great show, well, you want to take that show and you want to make it great everywhere you play. So the key is to obviously not take the shows that don't have the really good equipment. And you know, we have, at least we're at that point now at this band where we, you know, we know what we want when we get there. We know the kind of equipment we need, and you know, we make sure that we play on the best stuff we possibly can, or have the best sound guy come in and mix on the stuff that's not the best it possibly can, and just make it sound as great as it can. You know, it's the sound world is a tough thing, because you could sound great on stage and think you're having a great night, and then you have 20 people in the audience say, oh, I couldn't hear your voice, I couldn't hear the guitar, you know, and that's the kind of stuff you don't want to hear after a show. You want the shows to be consistent every time. You want it to sound, if it sounded great in Harlington, we want it to sound great North Haven, wants to sound great at Mohegan Sun. No matter where we go, we want the show to sound consistent and sound big, and that's, you know, crucial to having good equipment, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that was not an issue at all last year. I didn't hear one complaint, and I know I wasn't complaining because I was listening to it myself. So if anybody's questioning that, you know, why should I spend this money and go to Harrington? I mean, you're going to get a great show. It's going to sound good. And the musicians are top-notch musicians. I mean, it describes in your...
No joke. This band is no joke.
No, it's...
These guys
it's,
are home run hitters. They really are. Everybody,
it's,
so...
It's not. Michael Burns has played for Billy Joel himself, and...
Tommy Burns. Tommy Burns played 21 years with Billy. He was music director and played guitar with him. And he's just a phenomenal player. Phenomenal player. You know, a great person. And you got a whole slew of guys. You know, you got John Scarpullo on the sax. John did was in the horn section the last play at Shea Horn Section. It did shows with Billy Joel at Shea Stadium. He's worked with Tower of Power, Hall & Oates, you know, like just a bunch of, you know, Diana Ross, Jeff Beck. And no matter who we have in this band, they've all kind of worked with somebody that's been huge in the industry, and they didn't just get here by accident. And I kind of feel like I was able to, over the years, it took a lot of years, but you know, sift through different players, different people, and then just come up with that all-star lineup that you can eventually get to, that you know you can count on. And even our backup guys are ridiculous. You know, even they've played with everybody. So there's a really good bullpen of guys and a good deep bench that we have kind of with Big Shot. It's helped out a lot.
Yeah, when I was watching you guys, I mean, you said it's taken a long time to get the right group together, but you would have never known last year if you were watching you guys. You guys interacted like you guys have been playing together since you were kids in high school. I mean, that's how...
Yeah, well, you know, what's funny is there's certain dynamics that can happen within a band also, that you're together so long that it actually does become like you went to high school together. And I think when you get that comfortability on stage, it's very, very good. It's good for the audience. If you're comfortable and you're happy and you're having a good time, it's easily translatable to the audience, and it just transfers that way. But it can also be that those times where, you know, you have been with somebody for 10, 11 years, and you could push it to the limit. You know, you can go back and forth and you could banter. And I've had guys, obviously, through the band that I've known for a very long time, all great players, but also great personalities and funny, and we were able to, you know, do a lot of that stuff, and we're always able to communicate like that. So it's good. Makes it interesting.
Yeah. And your bio describes you as multi-instrumental, and it was fun to watch you play guitar, watch you play the keyboards. Do you have any favorite instrument that you play, or do you just love them all?
I you know, it's tough. I mean, I guess it's what I'm doing at the time. You know, the Billy Joel thing has required so much piano playing over the years, and really the piano playing is what I do the least. So, I mean, I would say, you know, piano probably be on the, you know, probably on the bottom of that list, only because I've been doing it so much, you know. And then when I go to the studio, when I'm in the studio, it's everything. You know, it's guitar, it's bass, it's drums. Love to play the drums. Love to record. Love to record drum tracks, do all that stuff. Build, you know, I kind of like the rhythm instruments. I haven't gotten into any horn stuff, but, I, you know, guitar, bass, drums, piano. I'm all kind of in the same realm in all those instruments. And, you know, from the beginning, it was always to accompany my voice, really. So it just, it was a byproduct of being a singer where, you know, I didn't want to have to rely on somebody else to be backup music for me all the time. And I said, if I don't learn an instrument, I'm going to be, you know, singing alone. So that's kind of helped. I love playing everything. I can't give you one more than the other. I miss playing bass when I don't for a while. I miss playing guitar when I don't for a while. So it's just a matter of keeping it all together and doing a little bit of each within the show to keep myself, you know, motivated and excited about it.
Oh, it's like your kids. When you give one too much attention and spend more time at one and not so much with the other, then you start missing the other. So it's almost 100%. Like that.
Yeah, because it's part of you. You know, I took a good chunk of years for each of the instruments, you know, and so when you put that time in practice and you get to that point where you could say, hey, I could play with, you know, I could play with some great people now. I've got chops. I'm up to where I need to be. When you can get to that point, it's a great feeling. But you're never, with music, you're just never good enough. You know, there's always stuff to learn. There's always, we're like forever learning. So it never really stops.
Well, I don't care what you do. If you're a master tradesman, you can relate to what he just said, because you're always trying, looking for ways to improve and looking for the new, you know, and adjust to all the new stuff that comes up. So with music, when a new genre comes around, and if you can, you know, if you can just keep what you're doing your own and then move into that just a here or there, it just makes it much more makes it much more interesting and keeps you going, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's helped the show a lot too. You know, I mean, we've come a long way. It used to be a time where I never got up from the piano, you know, and it just got to a point where it was like, my God, I'm like neglecting this whole other side of me. So I'm at the point now where I'm, you know, buying wireless microphones so I could get the heck from out, you know, out from behind there and tear it up myself, run around a little, have some fun, you know, play the bass, do an acoustic guitar set in the middle. You know, and all this has really made it just so much more alive, you know, for me to keep it going. You know, when you're doing something, you don't want it to, it's got, things by nature have to evolve. I mean, we're doing Billy Joel, and we'll probably always be doing a chunk of Billy Joel, but the show has really become, you know, a bit more than that also. You know, we had a lot of stuff. So now with the horn section that we've added, we have a couple of different horn sections, different units, but, you know, we're doing all different kind of stuff. Once in a while, we'll do some Chicago, we'll do, you know, some McCartney, but add the full orchestra effect with the horns, and it's made such a difference to me. So I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's all great music. I love Chicago. I love Billy Joel. I love Paul. Who doesn't love Paul McCartney or Beatles? Yeah. I don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't like at least one of their songs. They've only got well over, I don't know what, 600 songs or something like that they've recorded, and 300 of them went top 40. So.
Yeah, I mean, I downloaded that whole set they had on iTunes, and I mean, it's just ridiculous how many hits they have, and just how instrumental they were to, you know, influencing, you know, guys like Billy Joel, guys like Elton John, I'm sure, and all the young rockers from the 70s, and it's all about melody when it comes to that, and Paul was just one of those ridiculous melody writers. He can just breathe a melody, and you'd be like, wow, it's ear-pleasing, you know, no matter what he sang, just sounded really nice to the ear. So I mean, and you could take those songs now, reproduce them, put hard rock guitars behind them, they'll still be hits, you know, no matter what you do with a great melody, they'll still be a hit today. It's just a matter of production and how it's produced, and McCartney was one of the best.
Absolutely. And Billy Joel had quite a bit too. Is there any one favorite Billy Joel song that you actually have, or is that impossible?
I'm gonna say Scenes from Italian Restaurant. And I think it's so hard, people ask that all the time, and we do so many of his songs. And I guess on any particular night, it could go a different way, and we'd start Summer Highland Falls and be like, oh, God, I love this song. You know, or go into something else, and one night it'll be New York State of Mind. But I think ultimately to just put out one, it would be Scenes, because Scenes is like three songs in one. You know, you're getting that beginning section. There's variety to the song. It's not predictable at all. You don't know where the heck the song is going. His lyrics are telling a great story. You can relate, obviously, to everything he sings. You feel like, you know, you've been at a Village Green, or you've been here. Every town's got one, and, you know, doesn't matter where you live in the country, he's speaking to you. And that's one of those tunes that I just never get bored playing or singing. It's just a lot of fun with the band, and, you know, a nice long one, an epic one. So I got to say Scenes.
Yeah, I have to agree. That is one of my all-time favorites. I think my actual, if I would have had forced me to choose one, it's probably Baby Grand is my favorite Billy Joel song.
That's a great song, yeah.
I love listening to it.
With that, you know, I do different voices, so the guys in the band are always like, I'll break into it in like rehearsal or something or sound check. You know, John, the sax player, be like, man, you've got to do Ray Charles. You know, people have got to hear you do Ray Charles. You know, so I'll mess with my voice and do that stuff. And there were a few times we came close to doing that song. And then, you know, you just learn over the years, though, that, you know, if you're doing a bulk of shows and you're in front of a bulk of people that maybe aren't into the deep cuts, you know, the deep album cuts, you want to give them hits, you know? And I've noticed that the show, you want to do the album cuts a couple a show, but you really want to keep it mainstream, because what ends up happening is we'll learn that song, we'll do it a couple of shows, it doesn't go over, say, at one particular place, then all of a sudden we don't do it, and then we forget it, you know? So, because it falls by the wayside, and it's always usually about how the audience, you know, responds to what we're doing, so. But that's a great song, great written duet, and awesome.
Yeah, that's funny, because it's like, I've even heard Billy Joel say that in several interviews, that he has a hard time because he's only got so much time to do a concert, and there's no way he can cover every song that's been a hit of his to be in there.
And I can tell you flat out, Billy would not be playing probably the set list you're hearing if it was all about what he wanted to play. You know, Billy's going to put stuff out there, and he's going to see how the audience responds to it. Like any great, you know, entertainer, you want to make sure you're appealing to whatever masses you're in front of, and you want to make sure that, you know, everything you're doing is touching everybody at a particular moment. You know, everybody's liking it, either for the sound or for the whatever. And I'm sure Billy's written set lists that, you know, maybe didn't work, but they worked for him. But then you realize you put him in front of an audience, and maybe I've got to switch this around a little. And, you know, it's kind of the same process, you know. And he did, you know, when you have that many songs, pretty hard to stick them all in an hour and a half. So,
yep.
A little tough.
Yep, that's right. Very, very much so. And listen, I want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy man, and I appreciate you for giving the Lions Club and myself the opportunity to talk to you and give everybody. I know once they heard you talk and explain some, you know, that they'll, if somebody hasn't been to your show, they'll want to come out even more now, because you're what I loved about your show and your band is that you're genuine and you're fun and you're real, and it comes across in your performance. And I can't wait for tomorrow, to be honest with you, to get there. But we have to go now, because we're running out of time. And I want to thank, that was for everybody who cut in the middle of the interview. This is Mike Delgado. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the Mets. Yeah, I mean, you know, just sorry. I'm a Yankee fan and a big sports nut. It's Mike Del Judas. I'm very sorry, Mike.
This is no problem. It's fine. It's been butchered far worse than that. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
Well, the whole thing is, I don't think I practiced it so much, I didn't think I could butcher it, and I guess I found a way to make a mistake.
We know what's on your brain, man. We know what's on your brain.
Yeah, baseball's on my brain. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, I also can't wait till tomorrow. This was Mike Del Judas of Big Shot, everybody, and I just want to, you know, if you have any last words you want to say, go ahead right now, and then we've got to take you out of here.
Just come down tomorrow night and experience a great show. We're going to have a great time. We always do, and it's going to be a great night. We're excited about it and really looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And you're listening to WAPJ Torrington, 89.9 and 105.1 on your FM dial. I'm Pete from Lying Around Connecticut, and that was Mike Del Judas from Big Shot. He will be here, and he will be in Harrington tomorrow at the Harrington Concert for Sight. The gates open at 2 p.m. And the first show starts at 5 o'clock.
First show starts at 5:30.
5:30. I'm sorry, that's Harry Hsu of the Harrington Lions Club. I didn't really formally introduce you. He's been sitting here quietly just in case Mike was on a cell phone and in case I needed him, and he's here. And yeah, I did need him because he's corrected me twice already, and I've made a few mistakes as far as to what time. So
very good.
No. Say that one more time, Harry. Okay, gates open at 2.
The opening act is a U2 tribute by Unforgettable Fire, and they have a website, www.uf2.com. So that show will begin at 5:30, then it'll be followed by the Big Shot. And as we were saying, we did an informal exit survey last year, and everybody loved the Big Shot.
Yeah, so I can't see how anybody couldn't have loved them last year. They're great, and I'm not saying this just to hype up anything. It was just I had that much fun, and so did everybody else. It was a great time.
Dancing was fabulous. I mean, it got better as the night wore on.
And if it wasn't true, you just wouldn't have had them back this year. I mean, it's just that simple. Right. And
tickets are $25 in advance. You still have another day to buy tickets. They're $30 at the gate. You can buy tickets at the Warner Theater. It's family entertainment at an affordable price, we like to say. Two big shows, one night, one ticket. Children under 12 are free. Bring your family, bring your lawn chairs, picnic baskets, and just have a great time. We see generations. We see grandparents bringing their grandchildren and their children. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw parents with their kids and their parents both together. And yeah, three generations of family fun. And it is that type of that type of fun. And it's great. And also, Harry, thank you for coming. And hopefully tomorrow we'll be all sold out. And it'll be hard to move around that place. I mean, that's what we're looking for. And everybody come out, because the Harrington Lions Club does take this money and does wonderful, wonderful things with it. Puts it right back into the community. Mm-hmm. They have scholarship funds. They have community service projects that they continuously work on. And there's other organizations that help the blind that are associated with Lions Club.
Exactly. Connecticut Lions Eye Research Foundation, yep. Low Vision Centers.
Chris Radio, Fidelco. Mm-hmm. Yep. On and on. And I just want to I want to thank you for showing up. We're going to end this very shortly. And also tomorrow, before 2 o'clock, if you're around the Burlington area, in the center of Burlington, between 9 a.m. and 12 p.m., the Burlington Lions Club has a raffle going on with a generator as the top prize. And there's a $250 gift certificate to a covering place, and then $100 in gas at Cumberland Farms. So it's a wonderful opportunity to put up a little bit of money to gain a good prize. They'll be at CVS and Cumbie's tomorrow morning between 9 and 12. Thomaston Lions Club tomorrow during the day down in Thomas. If you're down in the Thomaston area, bring some food over to the IGA. They're trying to fill up the shelves of the food bank over there and collect some more food for them. And on Sunday, come out to the Torrington Titans game. It's Winston Lions Club Day. The game starts at 5:05, and the gates open around 4 o'clock or so. So I'll be out there. You can throw a pie in my face if you'd like to, and we'll be offering that up. And it'll be a fun game, and you'll learn a little bit about the Winston Lions Club and what they do. So, and that's it for this weekend. And I just like to thank the sponsors, because without the sponsors, the WAPJ sponsors, there will be no show. So it's the IMB Zena Temkin Foundation. Torrington Ford and Lincoln, serving the Torrington area for over 25 years. They're located at 1355 East Main Street and on the web at torringtonford.com. Torrington Savings Bank, offering banking services at 129 Main Street, 635 Main Street, 235 Dibble Street, and four other area locations. www.torringtonsavings.com. T&M Building Company, builders of homes in Torrington and throughout the region, on the web at tnm.com. Tosi Brothers Tires, located at 143 East Main Street in Torrington, and on the web at tosibrothers.com, serving Litchfield County since 1924 with a selection of tires and offering tire service including rotation. No appointment necessary. 860-496-2080. Charlotte Hungerford Hospital in Torrington at 540 Litchfield Street. On the web at charlottehungerford.org. Nutmeg Conservatory for the Arts, located at 58 Main Street in Torrington, a private nonprofit classical ballet school with training programs for talented and gifted students. At the web at nutmegconservatory.org. Dr. Avery Jenkins at the Center for Alternative Medicine, offering primary care, chiropractic, acupuncture, and nutrition treatment for all of Litchfield County. On the web at www.averyjenkins.com. Minutemen Press, located at 913 East Main Street here in Torrington, offering printing and design for invitations, postcards, business forms, marketing materials, and more. 860-496-7525, or on the web at www.minutemantorrington.com. I want to thank you. We're taking you over to WUH in Hartford right now. Okay.